We're thanking them for the time they've spent to study this issue, and now we really need to see an action that will give our industry certainty into the future.
Commercial fishermen push for a pebble mine decision from the EPA. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, February 25th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a big landslide in Southeast excites scientists around the world.
When I got up to the icefall, I started approaching it. Wouldn't you know that the thing had a pretty good release? Big thundering rumble. I hightailed it out there.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Alaska Premier Dental Group, offering restorative, preventive, and cosmetic dentistry with three offices, two in Anchorage and one in Wasilla. Description of services at smilealaska.com.
The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2014 PFD. Paper applications are located in your community. More information at pfd.alaska.gov or on Facebook. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
About 30 opponents of the proposed pebble mine met in Washington today with White House and high-ranking EPA staff. They came armed with a new EPA study that found a mine of pebble size would pose a significant risk to Bristol Bay and its valuable salmon fisheries. Now they're asking the Environmental Agency to take the next step and kill the project. As APRN's Liz Ruskin reports, they didn't get a definite answer.
Catherine Karskallen came representing 1,800 commercial fishermen. She's part of the delegation that urged the EPA to use a section in the Clean Water Act to block the mine's construction.
We're thanking them for the time they've spent to study this issue, and now we really need to see an action that will give our industry certainty into the future.
Executives at Pebble Partnership say it's far too soon for the EPA to take any kind of action. They haven't even applied for permits yet. They say last month's watershed assessment is flawed, in part because it's based on a hypothetical project. U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski and Congressman Don Young also say the EPA shouldn't butt in now before the state has a chance to review permit applications. But Alana Hurley from Dillingham says it's not too early at all. She says the mine has been a threat hanging over her community for a decade, her entire adulthood. Hurley is in Washington to represent United Tribes of Bristol Bay.
To spend a ginormous portion of my life worrying about the future of our watershed is horrible. It's stressful. It's terrifying to think that everything that makes you who you are could be taken away.
The group was hoping to meet with the head of the EPA, Gina McCarthy, but she couldn't attend. Heather Kendall Miller, an attorney with the Native American Rights Fund, said an EPA official assured them the agency would soon announce its next step, which she took to mean within weeks. But no one from the administration indicated what that action would be. In Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Troopers have made an arrest in the death of a woman in Quinnahock. Troopers had been silent in the 3 weeks since Lisa Johnson's body was found covered in brush. KYUK's Ben Matheson has more.
26-year-old Harold Smith was arrested in Quinnahock Monday and charged with killing 25-year-old Lisa Johnson. He was arraigned in Bethel Tuesday on charges of first-degree murder and tampering with physical evidence. Johnson's body was found about 3 miles from town off a trail near the end of the new runway. Megan Peters is a spokesperson for the troopers. She says the fatal injuries came in a fight.
Smith then moved Johnson's body to the location it was found at and attempted to conceal it with brush.
According to charging documents, the medical examiner's preliminary finding is that Johnson died of strangulation. Smith told troopers a different account of her death. He said that Johnson came to his home while intoxicated a few days before her death, trying to buy a gram of marijuana. He said he did not have any to sell. Smith told troopers that Johnson was mad, which led him to push her out of his home. According to Smith, her head struck a 2x4, and she was unresponsive afterwards with no pulse. Smith says he panicked and hit her body. He said he then burned his clothes and her clothes at the dump. He later burned the sled that he used to transport her. In his arraignment, the judge set bail at $500,000. If convicted, Smith would face a maximum of 99 years in prison and a fine as high as $500,000. The maximum sentence for tampering with evidence would bring up to 5 years in jail and a $50,000 fine. In Bethel, I'm Ben Matheson.
Thank you. A massive landslide in Glacier Bay National Park more than a week ago is exciting scientists around the world. Margaret Friedenauer of Station KHNS in Haines has more.
Scientists from NASA, the U.S. Geological Survey, and elsewhere are calling the slide at Mount La Perouse the biggest in the world in the last 4 years and possibly the largest ever recorded in Alaska. A group of scientists first detected the slide after it happened on February 16th. Colin Stark is a research professor with the Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory at Columbia University. Stark and his colleagues developed a technique, funded by the National Science Foundation, to identify massive landslides using global seismic information. Stark said when the La Perouse landslide showed up among their data, they knew something unusual had taken place.
Last Sunday, I was watching I checked the catalog that he generates every day, and I spotted an event that we detected but wasn't detected by the USGS or by an agency in Germany or the Alaska Earthquake Information Center. And when that happens, it's kind of a big red flag. It sort of says, ooh, this could be an anomalous event.
Stark and his colleagues try to identify long-period waves in their analysis. Short-period waves are the kind that normally occur in earthquakes, but longer waves can show a slower surface movement that might indicate a landslide. Stark enlisted help from NASA to get an Earth observation satellite to pass over the area. He also put word out to other scientists, hoping as the news spread, access to satellite imagery would also grow. Word eventually reached Haines pilot Drake Olson, who had located the La Tuya slide. He heard the approximate location of this slide to be around Bradley Glacier. He was hesitant to go on a landslide goose chase, but he took to the skies, and on the southern end of the Fairweather Range, he spotted the obvious change in landscape.
There was a cloud layer in Glacier Bay. I was going, you know, I got a lot of work to do. I shouldn't be going off and doing this. This is like a needle in a haystack. I kind of, you know, was just generally perusing everything, and I looked ahead and went, oh, there it was. Stuck out like a sore thumb.
Scientists estimate the breakaway from the mountain had started just around 9,000 feet. Olson landed near the terminus at about 3,700 feet. The debris field is estimated to be almost 5 miles long with about 68 million metric tons of material. For comparison, the La Tuya slide released less than a third of that. Olson skied the area to take photos, at least until he noticed the mountain and debris was still emitting small movements and sounds.
I put my skis on. I did a kind of a quick analysis of the snowpack right there where the airplane was just to make sure things were reasonable. And then I hiked all around in on the thing. And so when I got up to the icefall, I started approaching it. Wouldn't you know that the thing had a pretty good release, big thundering rumble, and I hightailed it out of there.
Stark says it's unlikely Olson was in danger. Most of the activity took place at the mountain when it broke away. The debris field is so large because it was moving across ice and spread out, he said.
It had nothing to worry about at that point because most of that was sliding over ice. Only the very initial part of the landslide was very, very steep, dropping about, I guess, about 1,000 meters, something like that. And that's what makes the forces that make the seismic waves that we detected, not the sliding over ice.
Stark said more massive slide events like these happen in Alaska than anywhere else in the world. And more happen than even scientists realize, he said. That's because most go undetected and unseen. But the new technique used to find this slide will hopefully help notify scientists when other massive landslides occur. Stark said he can even use the analysis to go back through data to identify slides that have occurred in years previous. Doing that, he's already identified a massive slide that he says took place in 1997 near Mount McKinley. As for the cause of the landslides, Stark said that's even harder to determine. He says most slides like La Tuya and La Perouse happen on south-facing slopes and often in the summer. That gives him a small clue into a possible underlying cause.
One thing I'm a little hesitant about sort of disseminating too much at this point, but a lot of the events in Alaska have been south-facing warm summer events. So there's a hint, and it's only a hint, that there might be some sort of rock permafrost thawing related, slowly, steadily losing permafrost ice, and that affecting the stability of the slopes.
Seismologists with Alaska Earthquake Center said once they heard about the landslide, they went back through their data and looked for long-period waves and found the event. It was the equivalent of a 2.5 magnitude earthquake, they said. Reporting in Haines, I'm Margaret Friednauer.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the perks of being an Alaskan in Hollywood.
So when you go into an audition, people ask where I'm from, I say Alaska, and it's whoa. Hold it. Wait, what?
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alaska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977.
ANSEP, the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, gives Alaska Native students the inspiration and opportunity to excel in science and engineering careers, building a sustainable future for Alaska. More at ANSEP.net. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
Sam Keto III is now at work as the newest member of the Alaska legislature. He replaces Juneau Representative Beth Kurtula, who resigned her House seat last month for a Stanford University fellowship. Governor Sean Parnell appointed Keto to the seat on Friday. House Democrats confirmed him this morning. Minority Leader Chris Tuck said Democrats were unanimous in their decision.
He had to answer some very tough questions, both in the public and with the governor and with us. And all through that, he was consistent, and he spoke from the heart. And I think that speaks a lot of a person.
Keto will fill in for Anchorage Representative Harriet Drummond on the Education as well as Community and Regional Affairs Committees. Drummond is absent from the Capitol for a family medical emergency. Tuck said Keto will continue on Community and Regional Affairs when Drummond returns. House District 32 encompasses downtown Juneau and Douglas, Petersburg, Gustavus, Skagway, and Tenneke Springs. Keto said he would have been a candidate for the seat if it had been open.
If Beth had announced that she would resign, I would have considered running for the seat in November.
Keto is a civil engineer who has worked on transportation and school projects across the state. In recent years, he has been a legislative lobbyist. After being shelved for nearly a year, a bill meant to limit Medicaid payouts for abortion is back, and it's missing a component that made it more agreeable to the legislature's social moderates. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reports.
Last April, something unusual happened. A member of the tiny Democratic minority in the state Senate offered an amendment to a bill, and Republicans adopted it. Some even spoke out in favor of it. Here's Senator Liesl McGuire.
I think this is exactly the right amendment for the right bill because I think it allays some of the criticisms about the bill, number one, and I think number two, it strikes that balance that I think many of the people in this body are trying to reach.
The amendment was to expand women's health services, and the bill had to do with abortions covered by state money through Alaska's Medicaid program. It does that by defining what constitutes a medically necessary abortion and requiring doctors to check off what ailment a woman suffers from off of a list of prescribed physical conditions. In all, the idea behind the modified bill was to bring down the number of abortions in the state in two ways, by limiting funds for them on the one end and increasing access to things like birth control and STD testing on the other. While the Senate passed the bill, the House version was put on ice. That is, until now. The House Finance Committee took up the bill again today, and the family planning language was a point of contention, especially for bill sponsors like Senator John Coghill, a Republican from North Pole.
I prefer not to have the amendment in there.
And Representative Gabrielle Ledoux, an Anchorage Republican.
That could be something that could be considered in budgetary talks, but I don't believe that it is appropriate as an amendment to a bill which is simply trying to define what the term medically necessary abortion is.
Before debate on the bill began in earnest, the House Finance Committee voted 8-3 to strip the language. Representative Les Guerra, an Anchorage Democrat, was one of the lawmakers who wanted to keep it in.
The science and the evidence is that family planning can reduce the number of abortions. By stripping that language out of the bill, they now have a bill that will increase the number of abortions.
The family planning component of the bill could still come back. When the House Finance Committee adjourned on Tuesday afternoon, Democratic members had already drafted an amendment to add the language back in. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
Former Bethel foster parent Peter Tony has pleaded guilty to 3 counts of child sexual abuse in a plea deal. In the agreement with prosecutors, the 70-year-old pleaded guilty to charges of sexually abusing a 4-year-old in 2012 that his wife had in daycare at their home. Those charges carry sentences from 5 to 99 years each. He also pleaded guilty to molesting a 12-year-old girl in 1998. She told a police investigator that she would wake to find Tony touching her. That was the year he lost his foster care license. He could serve up to 10 years for that charge. Tony was originally charged with 10 felony counts of sexually abusing minors. In yesterday's court appearance, Tony also pleaded guilty to aggravating factors like abusing the same victims multiple times and being more than 10 years older than victims. Those factors could increase his sentence. Authorities believe he has more victims, reaching as far back as the 1970s. He and his late wife Marilyn ran a licensed foster care facility from 1984 until he lost the license in 98. Tony told police there were several victims whose names he could not remember. The police affidavit noted that Tony said touching kids was an addiction. His former stepdaughter Kimberly Bruch has stated that Tony molested her and her 2 sisters. Those sisters later committed suicide. Peter Tony's sentencing is set for June. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski and members of the Southeast Alaska Regional Dive Fisheries Association talked last week about the possibility of a political solution to China's ban on Alaska and Washington State goey ducks. KRBD's Layla Carey has more.
Senator Murkowski stopped in Ketchikan after her trip to Juneau to address the Alaska State Legislature. She met with various groups, including some dive fishermen who are worried about China's ongoing ban on goey duck clams. Here's what she said about that meeting.
I liked how one gentleman put it. He said, some are saying that this is an issue that relates to science. Some have suggested that there's more politics. He says it's probably political science.
Phil Doherty is the executive director at SARDFA. He says he told the senator that scientific reasons behind China's embargo are not clear to his group or to divers in Washington state.
We haven't gotten all the information from China on their testing protocol and whether any of our clams that were subsampled over there were hot, but it certainly the PSP testing protocol that we do here in Alaska seems to be very much more than adequate.
PSP, or paralytic shellfish poisoning, is caused by eating shellfish contaminated with certain kinds of algae and toxins. It can be deadly, so all commercially harvested shellfish is tested before it can be sold. The ban has been in place since mid-December when Chinese officials claimed they found high toxin and arsenic levels in goey ducks from Washington State and from dive areas around Ketchikan. Doherty says the ban is a serious issue for local divers.
Well, we've closed our fisheries down completely. We haven't fished in the better part of 6 now, going on probably 7 weeks. Because of the volatile market in China and the inability of our goey ducks to reach the market. So, yeah, I mean, this is our number one concern right now.
Doherty says his group generally tests the goey duck fishing grounds weekly. If an area comes back hot or above safe levels for PSP, divers won't harvest there, fishing instead in tested safe areas. However, the association has suspended testing and has not fished for weeks. Doherty says the economic impact could be significant.
We're less than halfway through our guideline harvest level, and if this thing drags on much longer, there'd be 400,000 pounds of goey ducks that Mega One harvested, and the price before the closure was close to $10 a pound. So you're looking at next vessel value of between $3 and $4 million that may not get harvested.
Doherty notes that Canadian goey ducks are not included in the ban, although Canada's sampling protocols are similar to Alaska's. He says that adds to the evidence that the move might have been political. A group of U.S. officials are going to China on March 3rd to try and resolve the Geoey duck issue. Murkowski says she's going to pay attention to the outcome of that visit. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. There's a good feeling you get when you give, and each year more Alaskans are supporting things they love when they file online for their PFD. Alaskans like you donated $2.5 million last year to strengthen education, help families in need of food and shelter, and protect the most vulnerable among us. You even shared your permanent fund dividends with public radio to keep quality programming alive and well. This year, the PFD is expected to be a lot bigger. So come on, love Alaska. Pick, click, give. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
Last week, a handful of Delta Western Fuel Supply employees in Unalaska kicked off an effort to unionize by going on strike. As KUCB's Lauren Rosenthal reports, they're pressing ahead even after a visit from the company president.
None of Delta Western's 10 fuel supply shops in Alaska are unionized, but about a half a dozen employees in Unalaska want to change that. They're trying to join the Inland Boatmen's Union, the marine division of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union. Kirk Payne is the president of Delta Western. He flew in from Anchorage last week to talk to the pro-union workers in Unalaska and find out more about allegations that managers had singled them out for punishment.
Well, we certainly asked them if there was harassment, you know, if they had concerns. And, you know, if there are, certainly we'll address those.
Payne says Delta Western strives to provide a safe workplace.
First of all, we do not tolerate harassment, discrimination of any kind. You know, we have an 800 number that they can call either anonymously or unanonymously, and they're always welcome to call me.
But Payne said he hadn't heard any complaints, quote, of significance while he was in Unalaska.
Nothing that would warrant what the activities were on Sunday.
Payne's referring to the pro-union workers walking out on the job on February 16th. During their protest, the workers alleged that their managers had used 401k retirement plans as a bargaining chip, and they said that it was in violation of federal labor laws. Payne provided KUCB with access to a letter that was circulated among Delta Western staff in Unalaska. The letter is signed by Payne and Brian Bogan. He's the president of Delta Western's parent company, North Star Petroleum. In the letter, the executives urge workers not to unionize. To do that, they emphasize the benefits the workers currently have, and they also show how benefits might change if workers unionized. One possible scenario is that the company that administers Delta Western's 401k retirement plan may not work with unionized employees.
That's a discriminatory statement. It's a threat to treat union members differently than other workers at the company.
John Breyer is an organizer with the Inland Boatmen's Union. He's been working with Delta Western's pro-union contingent in Unalaska. Breyer says those workers submitted a letter to Delta Western requesting recognition of their union membership shortly after they walked out.
The company has it in their power to recognize these folks. With a majority of folks signed on making the demand, the company certainly can follow through on that.
It's been a week since the employees requested recognition, but Breyer says the company hasn't responded to them yet. For now, the workers have no plans to file a petition for union representation with the National Labor Relations Board. If they did, that could lead to a formal unionization vote among all eligible Delta Western employees in Unalaska. An information officer from the NLRB in Seattle says they received a formal complaint of unfair labor practices from the Inland Boatmen's Union. In the complaint, the union says that Delta Western violated federal labor law over the last 6 months. Payne says Delta Western will cooperate fully with the NLRB as they investigate the workers' claims. In Unalaska, I'm Lauren Rosenthal.
A new ABC television show called Mind Games premieres tonight, and one of the actors on the weekly series is a former Anchorage resident and East High graduate. Cedric Sanders says his role is an accountant named Latrell.
He's from the rough side of Chicago. He's very uptight. He writes the check for the company and keeps the books for the company Edwards & Associates. Edwards & Associates is a company run by two brothers, played by Christian Slater and Steve Zahn, and they have a unique agency where people come to get their problems solved by us, and we change people's minds using manipulation and psychology.
Does your Alaskan upbringing help inform your work at all as an actor, do you think?
I think my Alaska upbringing does help inform my work. I think it has a lot to do. Alaska's molded me and shaped me into the person that I am. Of course, with my parents, you know. Every time I come in town, most of the time when I come in town, I visit my high school, East Anchorage High School, and I talk to them, and someone asked the question, has Alaska, you know, helped get you roles? And I think what Alaska has done is, being from Alaska is just cool. You just got to say it. It's just cool. So when you go into an audition, people ask where I'm from, I say Alaska, and it's, whoa, hold it, wait, what? Tell me about that. And they want to know about the daylight thing, and they want to know about the seafood. And I tell them, oh, yeah, I'm a bit of a seafood snob because I get the best seafood, you know, there is. It grounded me in a way, and so I think it has a lot to do with who I am today.
Has it been difficult to be in Hollywood as a young African-American actor, and do you fight being stereotyped into certain roles, or what's that like? What's that process like?
Yes, it is difficult because being an African-American male, especially when I first got in the industry, being an African-American male in his young 20s, the roles were limited. You're not playing the doctor at 23 or 24. You're not necessarily the cop yet. And when I was 23, I looked 18. So the role was thug. And I'm like, okay, thug is fun once, maybe twice, but that's it for me. Because I think there's other images I want to put out there of the young African-American male. You know, there's all kinds of young African-American men. And I'd like to represent a lot of them. And one thing, Louis Gossett Jr., Academy Award winner Louis Gossett Jr., who I did a film with, he told me, son, if you want a long career, you have to pick your roles carefully. And it's not always about the money. And I'll always remember that.
Cedric Sanders is from Anchorage and is a cast member in the ABC show Mind Games that premieres tonight at 9. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ben Matheson in Bethel, Margaret Friedenauer in Haines, Rosemarie Alexander in Juneau, Layla Carey in Ketchikan, and Lauren Rosenthal in Unalaska. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau, and Liz Ruskin from Washington, D.C. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
BP Alaska. As part of their commitment to Alaska, BP and their employees are investing in over 400 education and service organizations in communities across the state. More at alaska.bp.com.
And by
First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's business dreams grow for more than 90 years. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. It's time for the Healthy Futures Challenge. Pull out the jump ropes or go sledding with the family and get out and play. Get moving with activities the whole family enjoys. Find out if your child's elementary school is participating in the Healthy Futures Challenge. Healthy kids are happy kids. Inspire your kids to get out and play every day. For more ways to get active, visit playeveryday.alaska.gov. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.